Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for attending this morning. I'm very excited. Today's session is the result of about 2 years of work that we've done here at Waypoint. Just delighted to have someone to share it with outside of our normal client base. So this morning, we're going to talk about becoming a super performing company and how to get your profits above the 20% mark we're starting to see emerging in the marketplace. I'm Randy McLean, the creator of Waypoint Analytics. What we do is cost and profit analytics for our clients. We have built a system where we can take their transactional data and their financial data, integrate it to cost it out in detail so that they can see on every single invoice and in fact, every single invoice line territory and so on, whether they're making or losing money. And this has become one of the most important things that a business can have and can use to drive profitability. Obviously, if you don't measure and monitor things, you can't make changes to them. And the idea is that there are things that you're doing that are unprofitable, things that you're doing are profitable. And if you do less of the former and more of the latter, it actually changes the nature of the business in a big way. This isn't necessarily something that we found out by ourselves. It's more from observation of the best companies, and that's why we're here today. Our clients are amongst our clients are some of the most profitable companies in the world, and by far. And across the last couple of years, we've been taking a close look at what they do that makes them different. We started off by saying, if we could just look at the numbers, how could we detect a company that was doing certain things? And what flowed out of that is what kinds of things are they doing that affect these numbers? Now, we got a great deal of insight into that, and that's what we're sharing. We also assist with strategy and tactics for some of our clients. Bruce Merrifield and myself have been working with our clients for a great deal of time. Bruce for more than 40 years, myself for about a decade. Since we have the visibility into what companies are doing that works really well and what companies are doing that is hurting them, we share that information with our clients. And so we're sort of outsourced profit advisors, I suppose, as part of our role at Waypoint. We oversee more than $75 billion worth of distribution and manufacturing business across North America and around the world. We have some offshore clients, and we have a large pool of information. And unlike many of the industry type things that I participated in the past, there's no puffery in what we see because we get actual numbers and we process them. And we have probably the largest pool of detailed information about what goes on in distribution businesses. So we have a really good vision into what exactly is happening. Waypoint was started in 2008. It's an online service focused on margin with three reports, at least it was when we started 9-10 years ago. Nowadays, we compute detailed costs and profits. We started out just looking at margin, and it turned out that we couldn't find any real correlation between margins and profitability. And we knew we had to do better. We started by looking at activity-based costing, which was the best thing that we knew of in the marketplace. But that was really designed for manufacturers, not so great for distribution companies. And so we had to invent quantum costing, which is a different way of doing costing that is more detailed and more the kind of thing that you would do you probably do when you sit down with a spreadsheet trying to cost out your own business. But we've put that on steroids and do that in a great deal of detail. Waypoint now has over 91 base reports in it and then thousands of possible combinations and permutations that you can pull so you can see every detail of business in terms of its cost and profitability. We also, as I said, we work with the top tier companies. We have, three kinds of companies. Most of our companies are the middle of the bell curve. We've had a number of companies that have been having near-death experiences that have got onto Waypoint in order to save themselves, and a number of them have done that pretty successfully. And of course, the companies that are really on top of things tend to be looking for more tools to maintain their leadership position, and they commonly use Waypoint as well. And so we probably have a larger proportion of high profit performance companies in our clientele than most companies do, because naturally it's a self-selecting group. People that work hard on their profitability tend to do better, and people that work hard on their profitability also tend to get tools like Waypoint to do it. Now, you may have done, we've seen a radical shift in the market in the last little while. We've all been through the Great Recession and the subsequent recovery, adopted the new normal that went on for quite some time. And we're starting to see some pretty big market shifts with the new administration as well. And so We're starting to feel things and we're starting to see things in the numbers. And we thought that this is a terrific opportunity to capitalize on what's happening in the market for companies to achieve higher profit rates than they've been achieving and probably than they've ever achieved. And that's what this morning's webinar is all about. All right, so let's talk. I'm going to talk a little bit in the beginning about some basic concepts, and then I'm going to get into the four steps, the four elements that we really identified correlate closely with companies have unbelievable profit performance. And frankly, one of the reasons why we're doing this is because even 3 years ago, there were very few, it was almost impossible to find a company with profit rates at the kinds of numbers that we're seeing in the top tier now. And that is really changing. A lot of companies have really come out of the recession and the new normal with new disciplines and new attitudes, new philosophies that have generated surprising profit levels. And that's what we're going to talk about here. What we're seeing in the marketplace right now is, typical companies are running 3 to 5% NBT, net before taxes. The second tier, we've been talking about the second tier, and we've seen them for years. They've always existed. Companies are making, 2 to 3 times as much money, maybe 4 times as much money in terms of a rate of profit as other companies in the market do. Sometimes they're very profitable because they happen to have fallen into or they happen to participate in an area of the market that just lends itself to higher profitability. But when a market reaches maturity, it doesn't matter what it is, the market and competitive forces will squeeze all the excess profits out of the marketplace, and most companies will be back down in the 3 to 5 range. But there have always been players that ran 10 to 13%, and they were the ones that have been doing the kinds of things that we're recommending today. They figured it out long before we did, and in fact, we learned from them what needed to be done, and when we started boiling it down into its essence. But we're seeing the emergence of companies at the top end that are running 18 to 26. And in fact, the top client in the Waypoint universe gets more than a quarter of its bottom line. But I think it's about 26.2 or something like that, 26.5 percent of its revenue all the way to the bottom line. And it's a remarkable company. And surprisingly, it's not a large company. And it's in a very difficult market and very competitive. And yet it does very well. And so we've been studying those companies. Now, the old top rates were, if we looked at the top tier, the average rate within the Waypoint universe was about 11.5% NBT. But now we're seeing a new top rate in the above 26%, I said 26.2. That's because there are some companies that are actually higher than that. So there's something changing in the marketplace as companies are getting together. We're pretty sure we know what it is. As always, technology always gives us a boost. When we got faxes, when we got computers, when we got mobile, when we got e-commerce, EDI, these kinds of things always move the market forward a bit. And these technology improvements are cumulative. And we're getting companies are able to run their businesses considerably more efficiently. And that's one of the things we'll be talking about today. This is the breakdown of what we've been seeing in the marketplace. The below 2.5%, these are the companies that are running a little bit low average performance. And of course, includes companies that actually lose money. It's about a third of the market. And these are companies that, frankly, they don't really know very much about what they're doing. And I don't mean to be insulting about that. It's just that the market shifts under your feet. And the top companies are always not only aware of what it's doing right now, they're figuring out what it's doing next. And they're reforming themselves and reorganizing and changing their policies, procedures, and so on in order to meet the market and to serve the market well. The companies that are sort of on autopilot tend to fall into this category down here, and that's part of the reason why there's so many of them. Anybody that grew up in the early days of, a couple of decades ago, I guess, in the earlier days than today. And I like to tell people when I'm speaking around the country that, I was a pretty darn good sales rep at the time. I still got plaques for my walls, and I made a lot of money back when, and I was a pretty good sales and branch manager. And if you asked me today to come up with a new sales program, I could give you a wonderful, terrific sales program that you could execute on, and it would be a near perfect program in my own opinion for 1985. But the problem is that we're not in 1985 anymore, and everything I know about doing that is dated, and probably wouldn't really work that well. Customers would say, "What are you doing? And why does this matter to me?" And that's the thing that a lot of companies fall into, and that's why we have this red band at the bottom. Typical companies are just about half of the market running. I'd say between 2.5-7.5% NBT in nominal years or decent years, but 17% above 7.5 and 9% above 15% is astounding. This is something that would be very difficult to find 10 years ago. And what's really happened is that companies are getting, you know, a lot more MBAs, doing a lot more analytics. Computers can calculate a lot more about what's going on in the business, and people are getting a lot more vision into what their profit dynamics of company actually are. Those of you that know me will know about this money-making, money-losing thing. And I'll talk a little bit about that today for the benefit of those that aren't really familiar or haven't really given a lot of thought to it. But getting down to why the companies are at the top of the field is that the top companies really understand their profit dynamics. They really understand what it is that they're doing. Now, they're constantly looking at, you know, where they're spending money, where the infrastructure costs are, figuring out how that relates to the business, working out ways of reducing that. And you've heard a lot of the techniques before when you've gone out to the to your annual events and that kind of thing. Been reading the trade press, you get little snippets of it. But I really want to tell you that the companies at the top are really focused on numbers. Now they're looking and measuring everything, and they're improving things because there is no silver bullet. It's not that there's one thing that you do and it'll instantly make you profitable. It's basically when you do many, many things a little bit better than everyone else, that coalesces or consolidates into superior profit rates. And so when you say measure everything, that's why it's important. They're also relentless on efficiency. And, you know, that sounds like some, you know, old news. And I'll talk about that, a little bit about that today. Of course, they're analytics and numbers driven, and they're looking to the future. It's a deadly trap to use your knowledge and experience from the past to repeat the past. Because it's not with us anymore, and dynamics change. And so you really have to make a conscious effort to think about, you know, what's changing and challenging your own and your company's assumptions and built-in, I guess, the things that keep the company in stasis. And then one of the things about the companies, the top tiers, is the leaders are tough. They're not afraid. Let me rephrase that. They're probably terrified, but they still make hard decisions. And after a while, it gets to be such a good habit that it doesn't frighten them or upset them anymore. And this is one of the things that is almost always lacking in the companies that are having a hard time keeping up, is that they're really afraid that they're going to mess something up, and they wind up not taking the safest possible path, which is basically to follow the herd. And it's, you know, there isn't much grass left to get after the whole herd has been across it. And that's part of the reasons they're so profit challenged. And I wanted to point out that the companies that have these leadership positions, they are aggressive about what they do in terms of the numbers, how they approach the marketplace. They are relentless about making sure that the costs are, that nothing that they do is wasted. And it turns out that this is actually excellent for customers. It is not a zero-sum game. You have to give to get. You cannot win by taking from the market. You have to be able to provide high levels of service. You really have to have a servant's heart when you're working with your for your customers and in the marketplace. And those are the guys that tend to be winners, and their toughness to make sure that that they're not doing things that they shouldn't be doing or not good for them actually pays for the customers, because it makes them more available to the customers that matter, and they can do a better job for the customers that really support their businesses. And so their look at the efficiency is very, very beneficial for their customer base. And paradoxically, it's one of the reasons that are most commonly cited for companies not wanting to do the new and innovative thing. They're afraid of what the customers will think, and yet, or they're afraid to take action on things that are not healthy for themselves and hurt their ability to serve customers well, and that prevents them from being able to serve them. So the top tier companies universally have excellent customer service and great customer loyalty, and it's because of the things that precede. So let's talk a few minutes about the profit dynamics, the things that drive the business. First thing is that it's probably common sense that certain invoices that you write are money-losing invoices. And the shocking thing when we first started looking at the numbers a decade ago is how big the losses are on the money-losing part of the business. And for those of you who haven't heard this before, many can probably quote it, and that's good, and you should be able to quote it. Over 60%, in fact, more than 62% of the invoices in the Waypoint universe are money-losing invoices. And don't forget, we have some of the top accounts in the world, or companies in the world in that number. So in the general market, the number is probably worse. And when I started this business, I would have estimated that maybe about 15% of the invoices were money-losing invoices, and it's nothing of the sort. Most of the activity you have in your business is activity that actually costs you money and eats profits that you've already had. And this one realization opens the gateway to superior profits. If you don't believe this, you can't get anywhere, because it's impossible for you to do anything that's really going to have a big impact, or anything near the impact that you're going to have, by looking at the things that you're doing that are losing money and then cutting that out so that you can free up your resources, do more things that make you money. And it's the scale of this number that really produces the huge profit gains our clients get. Most of our clients, the average gain that a Waypoint client gets by working on this stuff is 178%. And so that means they can triple their bottom line. We have lots of clients that haven't done the work to do that. We have lots of clients that have. And the difference between them is enormous. But it's this realization is the base of it, knowing how much money is there. That can be best seen in a whale curve, which is a way of producing a profit ranking report. And the if you take a profit ranking, people have been using these for years, and accumulate it and then graph it, you get a curve that looks like this. And what the chart is actually doing is it's taking the most profitable account, or the most profitable product, or the most profitable sale, most profitable invoice line, which we do in Waypoint, and sticking on a blank chart. And then we're adding on to that the profit we made on the second most profitable, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, moving down the list until we hit the break-even point where we make zero. And then we get into the invoices where we lose a dollar, and then two, and then four, and more, until we get to the last and most profitable invoice or invoice line or customer at the tail end. Now, the reason this chart is so important is because it really illustrates what's going on in the business. This is what a profit ranking will do. The chart visually shows you what's happening in the company. And essentially what's happened is the company, on the best part of what it does, the profitable part of what it does, has a peak internal profit of $5.5 million. So they made $5.5 million, sold, delivered, collected, bottom line profit on about 40% of the business that they did. And then they lost most of it to the dysfunctional business at the other side, that 62% of invoices that lose money. And when we get to the end, they've only got $1.3 million left. And of course, if I'm the CEO and I founded and run 11 businesses across my career, and after a while, there's a little bit of hubris that comes, certainly for me. I pretty much figured I had it down. And then I got into this and started working with people that were twice as smart as I am in our client base. And boy, did I have a learning curve. And what followed from that is that in the past, when I looked at any company I'd had and say, gee, we closed the line at last year at this, I want to get that. I want to increase it by 10% or 20%. So the natural thought was I got to go get 10 or 20% more business to do it. And the reality is I had all this profit slipping through my fingers the whole time. And if I just did some reorganization within the business and did some customer trading in the marketplace, I could have changed the bottom line of the business enormously. And I could have got so much more out of that than I could out of going out and just trying to get more of the same mix of good and bad business that I'd always done. And the same applies to your business. You have so much profit flowing through your business right now that just switching some of your customers so that you had fewer of the money losers and more money makers to replace them, you'd put more profit on the bottom line because you'd consume less resources. And so the profit realization in this particular company, they're keeping 1.3 out of 5.5 million. So they got a realization of about 27%. They're only keeping about 27% of what they've had. And if they did a little bit of work within that base, instead of getting an 8% gain or a 10% gain or even a 20% gain, they could get a 50% gain or 100% gain. And we see this all the time within the companies that that start to use Waypoint, put it to work. And so I think everybody can do this if they're smart and tough and they're willing to do the things that, willing to do the work that needs to be done. Okay, so another way of looking at it is on the left-hand side, we have all the profit that we made. On the right-hand side, we're losing a lot. And that really means that most of what we're making is being consumed just subsidizing the losses. And Bruce Merrifield's been talking about cross subsidies for years, and this is exactly what he has in mind. And so that realization is just a little sliver of profit that's left. About a year ago, I wrote a strategy book. I took everything I learned in detail and put it in a book called Profit-Driven Business Strategy. You can get it on Amazon. We'll send you a link after the webinar in our follow-up emails in case you're interested in it. But in that, I lay out a really, really aggressive strategy that's being used by these companies to grow rapidly, to dominate in the markets. Companies that come out of nowhere and took over the market recognize how to do this in order to not only gain for themselves, but they basically do a lot of damage to competitors' bottom line by recognizing that everybody has a whale curve of what supports it, and basically taking the supports of other people's whale curves and adding them to their own and stopping doing things that are dysfunctional and unprofitable. All right, so let's look at the money losing invoice percentages. Now, and I should say something about margin. I don't have a slide on it, but let me just tell you off the top. Gross margin percentage is an absolutely lousy indicator of profitability. In fact, it is no indicator of profitability at all. There's absolutely zero correlation between margin on a sale and the profit of the sale, none. And the reason why is that every sale also has a cost to serve that's associated with it. And those things vary all over the map. None of our systems show the cost to serve. And so it's impossible to tell whether a sale is good or not. The accountants will say, hey, the average margin or the average whatever is this, or average overhead is that. And so we need a margin of this other thing in order to win. But we don't actually measure it. Outside of Waypoint, where we do measure it, you can't really tell how much cost it was to serve the account across the year on any particular sale. And without that, margins are meaningless because it's just half of the equation. But one of the things that we found that has a high correlation with profit performance is the percentage of money losing invoices that are done in the business. And we looked back across 8 or 9 years of business and looked at the correlation between the company's bottom line and the percentage of money losing invoices. And this is what we found. Companies with about 2.5% profit rate right around there are running 65 to 75% of their invoices are losing money. The companies with about just under a 5%, they're running about 55 to 65% of their money losing invoices. Companies with 9.1% of the bottom line have that down to 15 to 25%. And the companies below 15% of the companies really at the top of the game. And this comes from basically making the company very efficient. And there's a there's an extraordinary benefit that comes out of this that I'll get to in a little while that's also correlated with this. But the best indicator that we found of a company that's likely to be highly profitable is how good it is at managing the number of money-losing invoices that it's writing. And so, you know, that means, I know that's affected by customer mix and customer selection. It's affected by process and automation efficiency in the company and a lot of other things. This is the strongest correlation to a high profit rate of anything. And if you only have, you know, 15 minutes to spend in a webinar, then maybe this is the best takeaway. All right. Now, that moves on to something else that we've found in terms of attitude and philosophy. The top tier companies look at the money makers as being really good and the money losers as being really bad. The difference between them and the companies that also ran, or really the executives of those companies, is that most companies, or many companies, the ones that are in the lower tier, see the money making invoices as good and the money losing invoices as not so good. And so, and the distinction is, the top tier companies really have a real hesitation to getting into things or continuing things that lose money, and the bottom tier companies basically are afraid to give it up, and so they try and find some way to shoehorn or ignore it or work around it. And when you combine that philosophy with their hesitation about their sales force ability to go out and win the best accounts, these companies have a very difficult time moving forward, and it's in many cases even surviving. They're basically in a, you know, they're on the road to being out of business or acquired, and they just don't know it yet. And those are the things that we see in the people that we worked with, you know, good, bad, and indifferent. All right, so here's a typical whale curve, and it's a whale curve from an actual company. They're making about 16.9% NBT on the best part of what they've done. They made about $15 million. This is a nearly $90 million company, and the net profit is about 3.8 million, or about 4.3%. And so this is an actual dynamic of an actual company. They basically got something like 11 million plus of profit flowing through the business that they're just not hanging on to. It's just flowing out to dysfunctional business. Okay, so that gets us to the four elements. So when we look at the four elements, I'll just enumerate them and then we'll talk a little bit about each one. The first thing is the companies that are at the top tier, they invest in the core competency of a distribution company, and that is moving product from vendors to customers. They understand that that's what they do, and they spend a lot of time thinking about how that's done, and how that's done for today, how it's done for 2017, how it's going to be done in 2018, 2020, and 2025. And you know, they're reading voraciously, and they're making some pretty courageous investments to look at those things. And it's not just automation; it's an analytics, it's communications. There's a lot of things, and we'll talk about a few of them. They have a focus on efficiency. And I know this sounds like old stuff, but this really matters. It's always mattered. And it's the thing that we've taken our eye off the ball collectively on. And we need to look more closely at that. We need to measure and monitor everything. That means we need to be doing analytics on what we're doing so we understand, you know, how and why we're making and losing money so that we can do something about it. And then we need to do something about it. And then the fourth thing is that looking to the future. Most companies are busy fine-tuning the past and trying to do what they, you know, what they've been doing a little bit better, and they're not so much thinking about what they haven't been doing and what they should be doing. And frankly, you know, most people wouldn't see themselves as being those people, but when you look from the outside, you see the initiatives that they're focused on really aren't, you know, all about what's going to happen next year. It's all about, you know, correcting the mistakes from this year and last year. And so it's one of the things that you can really tell there's a difference when you're working with these teams. They've got a high esprit de corps. They're excited about what they're doing. They're working on interesting things, and they're making a lot of forward progress. And then when they see their results, you know, it basically reinforces them and makes everyone feel like they're a winner. Okay, core competency. Distribution is all about product movement. There will always be distribution because if there weren't distributors, then every customer would have to deal with 1,000 vendors, and every vendor would have to deal with tens of thousands of customers, and it's just unworkable. And so the whole purpose of distribution is basically to give the customers one point of contact for most of what they need, and the vendors one point of contact to have access to many, many customers. And when you start thinking about what it is that you do and how you can do that better, that's at the basis of what these top companies are thinking. You know, they're thinking about, you know, how is social media affect us? What's happening with the millennial generation? What's going on moving forward? And I'll come back to that. But one of the things that I discovered in the last few years, which was a real epiphany to me, and as I said, I'd had a number of businesses, and I thought I would, you know, I had some pretty darn successful businesses and one massive failure, and that was a heck of an education in itself. But I happened to run across a seminar at a place that I was speaking at. And a young guy there was talking about business model generation and the business model canvas. And this thing is absolutely brilliant. There's a book you can buy for about 15, 20 bucks on Amazon. I'll put that in the follow-up email. It's called Business Model Generation. And it is an epiphany. And every executive, every senior management should read this easy book, understand what's in it, because it will change your life. The way it changed my life is I came back and looked at my current business. In the context of every business has 9 boxes that they need to fill. You know, who is your target customer? What is it they want? What is your product offering? How do you communicate it? What resources do you need in order to support that? What are your critical partners you need to work with in order to supply that? How do you monetize it? What's your cost structure? These things are important. And if you have and you need one of these models for everything that you do. You know, your service department needs a business model. Your rentals need a business model. Your bid accounts need a business model. Your regular business, your counter sales. Because what I realize, and what the people that talk about this have been talking about for some time, is that if you have any part of your business that's chronically dysfunctional, chronically unprofitable, the reason that is because there's something missing in the business model. And if you sat down for 90 minutes and filled in the 9 boxes, you would know exactly what was wrong, and you'd know exactly what to do or to get out of the business, because it's unfixable. You'd be able to tell that in 90 minutes. You can fix anything in 90 minutes from a business standpoint by going through this simple process. And so it's something that you should be doing. It basically gets you to have competency in the core of what's important to you. And it's something that should be revised probably annually, so that you can change as the market changes. Next thing that we found is there's a future Salesforce model. And it won't be a surprise to most people that are in this session that we have extraordinarily high costs in the Salesforce. It is almost always our first or second largest expense in distribution. And frankly, for the biggest companies, it is not. And the reason why is that they've moved themselves into a future sales model. And I'm going to recommend another book called The Machine by Justin Roth Marsh. And he argues that sales is the last field of human endeavor where there's no division of labor. And so I'm going to put some links into the book. But he describes a Salesforce model which is extremely efficient, has a much different cost structure, and generates a lot more sales, in particular for the investment you make. And most of the top companies have something like this. And so that's a good way to find out more about it. And so, you know, when you're looking at, you know, what you're doing in IT, what you're doing in warehouse handling, what you're doing in sales, what you're doing in transportation, all of these things are things that need to be fine-tuned year by year. And if you look at any one of these things, and if it's the same today as it was 5 years ago, if it's the same as it was 3 years ago, you've dropped the ball, because those things are changing rapidly. And that is the key to getting it to the front of the line. And, you know, there's lots more sessions in more detail on that. And I just don't have time. I could do a whole webinar on every one of those. But what I'm trying to do today is get the core philosophy that gets you 20%. And so those things are vital. So let's talk about efficiency. If you have gray hair and whiskers like I do, you were around in the 80s when efficiency was the term du jour, and you know, we had efficiency experts and consultants and all kinds of things, and that sort of devolved into quality and Kaizen and ISO 9000 and so on, and we kind of forgot about it. But efficiency is more important than it's ever been, because that's what makes Amazon into Amazon, and it's what it is what is allowing companies to come out of nowhere and zoom to the top of the market, and in many cases zoom right past us because they're efficient. And I want to define efficiency so that you can have something that that you can begin working on and have a lens to look at every part of the business. And as a numbers guy, I'll just tell you this, that efficiency is basically boiled down to, you know, what you get for what you put in, and dividing one into the other. And so you can make up your own efficiency measures to measure almost anything in the business. And if you put those measurements in place and then add a time component, how are they changing across time? You're doing the most sophisticated, or nearly the most sophisticated things that you can do. And so for some examples of this are, and you can work out what you need for every part of what you do. But some examples are, how much product do you move in the warehouse? What is the value of product you move in that warehouse per person, that for a full-time equivalent person in the warehouse? So there's a formula of what you get out for what you put in. How much gross profit value do you get for every dollar that you spend on your sales force? How much gross profit value is on every delivery that you make? And it's always, you know, taking two things that you can measure, a production measure on the top, something that's of value to you, revenue, gross profit dollars, a number of customers, number of new accounts, and then you divide that into something that you have to put in to get it. And so this is a simple formula that you can use everywhere. And if you put this in place and see how you're doing now, do some work and see how you're doing then, you can tell if it's worked or not. And this is the kind of things that are going on in the top companies all the time. Okay, so let's talk about what goes on in the business. And this is an important concept. It's called the conversion chain. And the reason that the business exists, the bottom line reason, is not to serve customers. That's how you get, that's how you serve the purpose of the business. The purpose of the business is to make money by converting revenue into profit. And there's a conversion chain that goes on in the business. And I'll give you an example of this because it gives you some ideas about where the top companies are measuring what they're doing. And you can too. So if you look at revenue, you've got 100% of your revenue, whatever it is, about 76% of it is being taken off into cost of goods. You've got to pay for the product and the freight in to get it into the warehouse. And so so you have your 100% of revenue, 76% of it's being consumed, paying for the product, and that and what that leaves you with is gross profit. We call it operating cash. And we think of it as operating cash because we want people to understand the value of it. This is the money that you have to run the business. This is the money that you have to pay for your overhead. This is the money that pays everybody's salaries, gives the company a bottom line. Cost of goods and the part of revenue that's dedicated to cost of goods doesn't have anything to do with that. The product has to be paid for, case closed, that's that, and has nothing to do with what you can manage. But the operating cash is what you can manage. That's about 24% of revenue in the Waypoint universe. And about 45.8% of that is being consumed through operations. And we talk about operations, that's basically everything on the logistics chain to market and advertise and process orders and pick, pack them and deliver them and pay for your overhead. It excludes sales compensation. We leave that to later, and there's important reasons for that I won't get into today. So after we've paid for our operations, that leaves us what we call NBC or NBC profit or net before compensation. That's about 13% of your revenue, or 13% of revenue and distribution across the board, across the $75 billion that we look at here. Out of that, about 31% goes off to sales compensation. So about a third of that's going to sales compensation, and it basically leaves about 5.4% of the original. Now it's 31% of the operating cash that's going out. It leaves about 5.4% of the original revenue for the bottom line. And these are just sort of averages across the board. And I'm sorry, I misspoke. This is not across 75 billion. I think we pulled about 35, 40 billion to conveniently gather these numbers for this morning. But this shows what's going on in the business. And every stage every step of the way, you're spending money on certain things. And this is where the efficiency comes in. You want more of this operating cash to find its way to the bottom line by spending less per operating cash dollar on the operations and sales compensation along the way. So let's take a look at it in terms of just pure operating cash. And just in the operations part, about 5% of operating cash goes to order entry and order processing. About 16% goes to your pick pack operations. By the way, I will include in the follow-up paperwork this presentation so that you have it if you want to review it, refer it back to it, or even show it to other people. And we'll also, we're recording this and we'll make a recording available. So if you want to watch this again or have somebody else that's missed it, watch this presentation. We'll have that for you as well. So at any rate, 16%, a little over that, goes to pick-pack operations. Delivery is about 11.4%. About 35% of it is going out to overhead. And so that means about a little over two-thirds of your operating cash is actually going to operations, and you got about a third left to split between the sales force and creating a profit for the company. And that's what's going on across the board in the market. And these numbers are a little bit higher than most companies are achieving because we have a lot of overachievers in the mix. Now, we started looking at the companies that were really killing it and the companies that were just sort of average. And this is what we worked out in terms of the number of dollars we're spending on each transaction line. And so, and this is, you know, if somebody gives you an order and it's got 10 lines on it, this is what it costs you to handle the one line of that. At the order level, it costs you about $277 to handle a line on an order in general. Pick-pack operations, about $2.19 to just handle the pick-pack on one item on an order. Delivery is about $3.58 on one line on an order. And your overhead's about $5.88, so it comes to about $14.42. Now, the top tier companies are super efficient at what they've done. They've invested in automation, they've invested in systems, they've had software upgrades, they've done all kinds of things, and they've used many of the techniques that that we talk about in the strategy sessions that we do with them. Come from the wisdom of other companies, or in the videos that that we have online on YouTube and up on Profit Ideas and other places like that. And so the top tier companies, this is what happens when they get really relentlessly focused on efficiency and cost control, customer mix, and these kinds of things. This is what they look like. Their order costs about $2, down from $2.77. Pick-pack is down to an astounding 66 cents a line. And this is, you know, unbelievable, but it's completely doable because there's so much low-hanging fruit that most companies have mixed. Things like thinking about where the packing station should be, how much walk time is going on in the warehouse, how they organize their product inventory. And let me bet that some of the people listening have, you know, their products are all organized in the warehouse, all the stuff from the same vendors in the same spot. And that's ridiculous because that's convenient for getting product in and it's terrible for getting product out. It causes you to have to hire more people in order to handle that. You know, having all the packing stations nearest the delivery area. This is the things we always did, you know, when we were new, and the top companies don't do this anymore. They reorganize looking at the efficiency and what their cost structures are and what's driving those costs, and they change those things. And so they got a 66 cent average pick-pack cost for getting a bundle of stuff out the door. 36 per item, cents per item for delivery, and $1.58 on overhead. And so these companies are spending about $4.63 on an invoice line. And the reason that this is so important is that, it won't be much of an epiphany for most of the people who are listening here to recognize that if you have an order with 10 lines on it and you can make that into an order with 11 lines on it, that's good. The problem is there's a certain threshold. And in your company, If you got less than $14.42 of gross profit on that line, it is not good. It basically compounds your losses. And this brings us to one of the critical surprises, one of the big realizations. In most companies, one of the biggest money losers is where areas where they have an awful lot of very small orders. And I can just say two words to basically hone everybody on that, and that's counter sales. Most companies are very, very challenged on their cash sales, counter sales type operations because they're hugely expensive, and they basically attract and accumulate enormous numbers of the orders that are too small to be profitable for the company. And so when we're giving advice to companies, it's almost a knee-jerk reaction for us to say, you know, you can't handle so many small orders. But the epiphany for us came when we started looking at the top tier companies, and they can handle the small orders because their increases in efficiency. What they have done across the board in their company is they've lowered the threshold of the cost structures on a typical invoice, which means they've lowered the threshold for the gross profit or operating cash on an invoice that they can successfully and profitably handle. And that means they can make huge profit generating businesses out of orders that are too small to work for most of their competitors. And this one thing can change the nature of the profit generation of the company enormously, and can add several points to the bottom line of a company. And that's why the efficiency matters. So these companies have invested in product movement, motion in the warehouse, and how it is that they get product moving into the warehouse in the first place, within the warehouse, very importantly. And there's all kinds of information and consulting and systems and procedures, things that you can be doing that will enormously change the productivity and the amount of value that you can handle per dollar spent in the warehouse. And then the same thing happens in delivery and even in overhead when you start thinking about the customer interactions for order handling and invoice collections. They have changed radically their Salesforce costs by adopting that future sales model and having a Salesforce model where there are certain people that handle the preparation. You know, they have staff people that are doing lead generation and prospecting, setting up appointments. They have their high-priced, high-value guys, a very narrow number of them, doing presentation after presentation and nothing else to persuade customers to do things that they're not already doing now, whether it's coming and buying from you as a new account or buying more from you as an old account. They have their top people, their most expensive people working on the things that they do well, and they don't bog them down in paperwork and the rest of that stuff. And then they have people that do customer service, follow up, you know, customer interaction and problem solving outside of that. And these are all much lower cost, usually salaried type people, rather than having the high cost commission people wasting their time that produces low value. They match the cost structure. They avoid or offload operating costs. You know, they have customers. You know, one of the biggest dangers that you have is a customer that has a lot of locations and no infrastructure of its own, and it uses your infrastructure to send $3 of stuff to 1,000 different places. And there's no way to make a money on an account like that. You have other accounts that have all kinds of infrastructure for distribution, but you don't use any of it, and so you're in the same boat. And you could easily go back to many accounts and say, well, you know, we're going to pack up for all your locations. We're going to send it to your distribution center. You can put on the same truck that's traveling the last mile. And we've got one shipment for 14 of your locations instead of 14 shipments to 14 locations, all of which, or many of which, are the really small orders. And there's a lot more that goes with that. But finding other ways of handling the offloading the operating costs, more direct ships where the vendor's paying for the shipment and you're not. So they have mastery over these things. They're doing more of the things that you already know about, but they're focused on them. EDI, many companies look at EDI as a necessary evil in order to get a big account. The top of companies say the more EDI business, the better. Less mistakes, no people involved. We get a flow. They've got a big switching cost for the customers to leave us, go someplace else. They're going to have to get it all set up technically to make it work. You know, we love EDI. We're promoting EDI, and the small companies are trying their best to avoid it, trying their best to avoid something that adds efficiency to their business. They change a lot of fixed cost to variable. A number of our clients have moved into the new world of transportation. A few years ago, one particular client basically sold their entire fleet operation to a local carrier. Their trucks, their drivers, everything went to the carrier, and then they give the carrier their business, and they cut their delivery cost by about 75% because they cut out the cost of having trucks that were idle because they weren't fully utilized. And so they had excess capacity and they gave it to somebody that could utilize it, and they only have to pay for what they need. And most other people say, no, you know, we got these fixed costs, got to have the trucks, got to have the drivers, and so on and so forth. And they basically took something that's traditionally fixed and made it into a variable cost. Now, this is vital and one of the most important things, maybe I shouldn't have left it down at the bottom of the list, but they're matching and aligning prices with their cost structures. And this is really vital because you will be giving big discounts to companies that basically are eating your bottom line, and you'll be charging much higher prices to people that are extremely valuable for you. And what does that do? It attracts more of the basket case money losing accounts that are going to eat you alive and make it impossible for you to make high profits. And you're going to put at risk the best accounts that you have because other people are going to figure it out and they're going to be able to take them away by having a better price model. And so your best accounts are at risk and your worst accounts are really secure. And it's the opposite of what you need to be doing. You need to be trading accounts in the marketplace. So as I said, market automation, examining company customer infrastructure, eliminating duplicated locations is a big deal. The top companies have as few locations as they possibly can. Some of the top companies are nationwide with one single distribution center. If the product, you know, lends itself to that, if they don't have cube issues, or they can find other ways of using 3PL and other things like that, it prevents them from having duplicated management, duplicated inventory, duplicated all kinds of things that cost you money and require, you know, additional infrastructure to manage. And they got the specialized sales force model, and they have concierge customer service. I have a business reason for people to do business with you, and we have all kinds of videos and other information on this. We'll give you some links to some of the places where we have our big video libraries with the kinds of advice that we share with our clients. And finally, intelligent pricing. Okay, analytics, you got to measure everything. And here's some whale curves to show what's going on in the business. This is a company that makes about $65 million. It's been making 8 to 10 to 12 million a year for years. And, you know, they're a great company. They've been doing really well. But this business found out when they got onto Waypoint how much profit was actually there and put together a plan and went and got it. And they raised their the profit line last time I looked at them to about a little over 25 million about 18 months in, and that was a renaissance. It was, you know, double the profits that they'd ever had in the business. This is a difficult business, did a great job. Here's a company, and they started doing this stuff long before Waypoint existed. They were one of the first companies to get on Waypoint because they thought it was a great tool. They have almost no money losing business. This company, by the way, is about one fifth the size of the company we're just looking at right now, generating about the same bottom line. And they are in one of the most difficult dog eat dog businesses you can imagine in a hugely competitive area of the US, in a business that I wouldn't get into on a bet. And yet these guys enormously successful, and by the way, have some of the highest paid salespeople on the planet. So this is a business that's hitting on all cylinders, run by a guy that has taught me a lot, and one of the sharpest businessmen I know. Okay, profit value segmentation is another thing we can do with analytics. You may have done some segmentation work before. A lot of people have. The results have been mixed at best and abysmal more typically. It's usually because segmentation is done by things you can see, and there's no correlation between profit value or customer value and segments. You know, there's this broad strokes thing that says, oh, we do really good on bid business, so we want to specialize in bid business. And that maybe works to some degree, but even within the bid business is good and bad. And if you really want to hit that top tier, you can't afford to have a lot of bad business in your business. And so if you don't measure it better, you're sunk. This is the profit value segmentation model that we invented. We developed this by thinking about what are the salespeople, the branch managers, the sales VPs need to know, what are they going to do next? And so we looked at them by operating cash contribution to the company, which is vital and can't make a lot of money or lose a lot of money on a small account. And then within the large accounts and also the small accounts, you know, how do they break down and how do we value them? We've got profit drain accounts. These are ones that are actually eating your bottom line and you either need to fix them or get rid of them. The next are the high potential accounts. They have great potential. They're not making a lot of money, but could need to work on the logistics of these businesses and the back and forth, how you do business with them so that you don't spend as much money servicing them as you do right now. You get the high efficiency accounts. These are guys at the end of the scale that really know what they're doing, and they can be really valuable. These are also companies that are platinum accounts, and you can protect them by having pricing that's appropriate for them, and that is lower than the market. And in fact, our research shows that you can have price points that are 5 to 8% below what the market average is in these accounts and still make all the money you're making right now, as long as you're not using that money to pay for these guys, which is what's happening right now. If you can swap some of these out and swap more of these in, you get more money to the bottom line, and you can offer the lowest pricing you've ever offered by far and lower than your competitors can, and still make as much or more than you've ever made. It's all mathematically possible. And that's one of the things that analytics has revealed, is that in the past, we thought it was zero sum. If you gave discounts, then you were going to make less money. And that's just simply not true. If you change your customer mix, you can stop giving away 3/4 of your profits to these guys over here in the red, and give some of it to the guys in the green and keep some of it for your, and most of it for yourself, and make a lot more money. High leverage accounts are the ones that are super profitable, where you should be running your sales penetration programs, because the more you sell, the more you make, and it raises the profit line for the whole business. We have whole webinars on that. We'll talk about these things. We have a whole series up on YouTube that you can watch. It gives you more detail on this, but this is one of the most powerful things that top companies do. I have some numbers that I'm going to share with you in the presentation we send along behind, just to show how those things break down typically. And this is the kind of report in Waypoint that our clients are using to see the profit ranking and to see the what categories or profit value segments the customers are falling into and what their cost structures and so on are. And this is really the gateway to being able to take some of these actions. I'm also going to send in the presentation some useful metrics so that you don't have to write them all down. But these are the typical average numbers when we look at some of the ways that we measure the efficiency in the business. You know, operating cash produced per delivery is about $260 per delivery. Operating expense per delivery is about $188 of expenses across the board when we look at it on a per delivery basis. Now that's not the cost of a delivery, that's the cost of all of the thing. When you just say, you know, we've just taken an order, it's going to turn into delivery, we're going to spend $188 on that, and all in overhead and everything. Operating cash per operating expense, and then some other some of the conversion rates, and these are some of the industry averages. You can use them as benchmarks, and you may find them informative when you can compare your own numbers to them. By the way, we have an assessment report that's no charge. We'll send you a link to the assessment report. You can go online, you can put in 30 numbers from your business, and our system takes it all and will produce what would have cost about $50,000 as a consultant's report. You get it back in about 10 minutes. It's about a 20-page report that talks about all of these things in the context of what your business is actually doing. And it'll give you some numbers and give you some ideas how you compare. Okay, the reason why analytics matters is helps you get in control of the profit drivers and helps you focus time and resources on the things that are actually going to make money or change the nature of the business. Obviously, you're going to make better decisions, because right now, most of what you know and what you've been taught is not good for you. And doing things like pursuing margins and so on and so forth is part of the reason why your plans and initiatives are not really turning out the results that you'd like to have. And when you have numbers, other people can get involved because they know what to do and they can get guidance by looking at the numbers. You know, we should do this. Oh, that didn't work. We should stop doing it. If you're not doing that, then people will tend to keep doing what they've been doing. Okay, that brings me to the wrap up here, which is really future vision. need to be looking at current and future needs, need to be where the market is going, and you need a continual reinvention of your business models. Your entire company is organized for stasis. And what we talked about with the CEOs and presidents of companies is this. If you basically went on vacation tomorrow or you got sick and couldn't go to work for a few days, the business would keep running. You have an entire structure, an entire personnel roster. They're going to make sure that things keep running. The business is designed to stay in stasis. It will not change unless somebody actually changes it. And that is the top job, that and the vision thing of the chief executive of company. If you're not working on change, if you're not driving change, if you're not breaking some crockery, if you're not causing some people to say, I want to do it the way I've always done it, then the business isn't changing and you're falling behind. And so those reinventions are really important. Looking at your process and your policies annually to say, does this make sense anymore, is vital. I guarantee you have 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 year old policies at work in your company right now. And maybe some of them should remain in place because they're valuable. And some of them are absolutely preventing you from being able to move into the future or having the profit lines that you could have. And we find this all the time. You should be looking at that. So don't be anchored in the past from past practices and particularly in sales structure, because the sales structure of the 50s, 60s, 80s is not serving the industry well. It is one of the biggest issues in the industry right now. So the four elements: invest in your core competency. How is it that you move product? What do you do? Make sure that your numbers driven and you're analyzing everything so that you're actually moving the company forward and you're detecting the areas that need change so that you can drive the change there. Be focused on efficiency because that matters and will affect your bottom line. And make sure that you're looking to the future. So that's everything I have for today. If you're not a Waypoint client, you can find out more about us at our website, waypointanalytics.net. We'd be delighted to talk to you. Call me up. You know, if you have questions about what we covered today, there's something you'd like to know, I'd be delighted to talk to you about you and your business. If you're already a client, I haven't heard from you, I haven't talked in a while, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Otherwise, we'll see you in our next strategy sessions or whatever it is that we do together.